And now it's a better book. It's actually the threat vector I found took a lot more research, but it's actually involves uranium that we're all talking about right now. Everybody wants to know where that uranium is, the 900 pounds of enriched uranium they can make a nuclear weapon with. Read my book. I know where it is. It's in there.
That's Brad Taylor, and I'm Dan Scunner. This is Conversations. Brad Taylor is a New York Times bestselling author and a retired Army lieutenant colonel who spent years in special operations. His Pike Logan novels draw heavily on that experience, combining global intrigue with plenty of action. And he joins us to talk about Shadow Strike, the 20th Pike Logan novel. Brad, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we start talking about this 20th book in the series featuring the character Pike Logan, for those who aren't familiar with this series, tell us about Pike Logan. Who is he?
Yeah, he's a member of a classified counterterrorist task force that goes around the world solving problems. And he's a creation. When I first started writing way back when, I wrote One Rough Man, I wanted to write a story of redemption. That was what I wanted to do. That was the theme I wanted to do. And I hadn't had any instruction on how to write. Nobody's ever taught me anything about writing, only by reading other authors. So I Googled, you know, what do you write? How do you write? And they said, write what you know. And so I was a special forces guy for my entire military career. So Pike became a counterterrorist commando. But if I'd have been a police officer, he'd have been a cop. If I'd have been a priest, and Jennifer Cahill would have been a nun.
Well, what is it about this character? You wrote the first book. You probably had no idea you'd be writing 20 books about this character.
No.
What is it about this character that captivates you that you want to keep telling the story around him?
Well, I've always been a voracious reader. And when I set out to write, all I set out to do is write something that I would like to read. And so that continues on to this day. When I'm crafting a story, it's like, what would I like to see Pike do? What would I like to read if I were going to read this story? And so my wife says I'm Walter Mitty. I'm always coming up with stories. And so that's basically how I put them on the page.
Well, speaking of stories, where do you take readers this time?
Yeah, Shadow Strike is, it's about, believe it or not, it's kind of topical. The asymmetric threat from Hezbollah and Iran and their Quds force, how they project power through asymmetric means throughout the world. So this one's basically primarily set in Argentina. I was doing some research. I'm also still keep my hand in national security affairs. And after the October 7th attacks against Hamas, when they did the October 7th attacks, we started looking, okay, what could threaten us? And obviously, we're worried about Israel, but Hamas is kind of a one-trick pony in the Gaza Strip, and that's about all they can do. But Hezbollah is worldwide. And I started doing research on it and found out that, believe it or not, the preponderance, there's more Hezbollah in the Triple Frontier. Outside of Lebanon, it's the greatest preponderance of Hezbollah in the world, down in the tri-border region of South America. In 1994, the greatest attack against Israel happened down in Buenos Aires before October 7th. It was done by Hezbollah. And so that piqued my interest, and I started writing the story from there.
Without spoilers, tell us a bit more about this. Pike Logan faces an enemy he has faced before, the Ghost. And I'm curious about why you decided to bring that enemy back again in this latest novel.
Yeah, he's a pretty complex character. When I'm writing any of the antagonists, I want him to be three-dimensional. I mean, I've interrogated terrorists. You're really surprised that this guy is an actual human being. I've never met a Dr. Evil who just says, I want to kill people just to kill people. Hannibal Lecter running around like that. And so I tried to create a character that's really three-dimensional of what his motivations are. I mean, we look at him as doing heinous, horrific things, but in his mind, he's the hero of his own story. And, he's doing what he thinks is right. So he was in Enemy of Mine, my third book, long time ago. And by the end of the book, I was going to kill him. And I kind of was like, he's a conflicted guy. He's doing bad things, but, I kind of liked him. So instead of killing him, I captured him. And he went away to a prison, which is explained. And he's been in prison ever since. I never thought about, okay, what am I to do now? I mean, I wish I could predict, in book 20, I think you can bring that guy back. But I was creating a character out of whole cloth, a Hezbollah guy. And I thought to myself, you've got the Ghost. He's in prison. Why don't you just break him out of prison? And so that's kind of how the story starts.
And Pike Logan is thinking that he's dealing with an assassination, kind of a one-off event, but he finds out it really has global implications. And again, no spoilers, but what can you tell us about how this plot kind of opens up for him? And he realizes much bigger than he initially thought.
Yeah, so the Quds Force is a real organization from Iran. They go around the world training up people and doing directed assassination, and they have a history. One of the things that sparked this story was we caught some Hell's Angels from Canada who were trying to assassinate a dissident here in the United States. Turned out they'd been hired by the Quds Force, and they hired Hell's Angels in Germany to do the same thing. And so the initial plot is a threat against the Prime Minister of Israel's life, who's going down to Buenos Aires for the anniversary of the AMIA bombing of 94. And as they start to unravel it, they find out it's a three-pronged plot. There's a threat against the United States homeland, as well as a threat in the Middle East.
So, as you said earlier, this is kind of eerily prescient in a way. I mean, that part of the world, Iran, is certainly in the news now. And I'm curious, as you know, you're obviously keeping your finger on the pulse of what's happening around the world. And when it comes to writing the book, how do you blend fact with fiction to tell the story?
I always try to stay current on the cutting edge of what's happening. Take a look at the threat vectors around the world. Try focus on that. The problem with current events is they're current. And in this case, it actually caused quite a bit of consternation. So I was on the verge of typing the end on this book, and it had a completely different ending from what's in there now, because right before I typed the end, Israel attacked Iran, and we joined them with a midnight hammer bombing their nuclear facilities and completely eviscerated the ending. If they'd have waited until my book came out, I'd look like Nostradamus. Instead, it just completely destroyed the ending. And I told my editor, the book's not any good now, that the whole landscape's changed. And she was pulling her hair out, and I said, look, it's not as bad as you think. So, and what I told her was, it's like I wrote a story about the hunt for Bigfoot, and the entire story is the hunt. And at the very end, when I'm going to do the actual targeting of Bigfoot, I find out that Bigfoot doesn't exist. And I'm like, uh-oh, now what am I going to do? Well, what I'd have to do is all the hunt still stays there. I just need a different Bigfoot. And that's what I told her about this thing. I said, all I got to do is find a different threat vector. The one I originally was going to use involved their ballistic missile defenses and things like that, which we wiped out. And now it's a better book. Actually, the threat vector I found took a lot more research, but it actually involves the uranium that we're all talking about right now. Everybody wants to know where that uranium is, the 900 pounds of enriched uranium they can make a nuclear weapon with. Read my book. I know where it is. It's in there.
So you're able to draw upon your military experience for a lot of the details to make them ring true in your novels. But I'm curious about the particular research challenges this novel may have posed for you.
Well, one of the biggest research challenges is the fact that stuff changes so much. But a continual research challenge is just keeping up with technology, to be honest with you. I mean, I can talk weapons all day long, but even that shifts a little bit. But technology is a consistently constant churning beast as to how we operate and what you can and cannot do on the computers, on phones, on everything else. Drones, for instance, I kind of pat myself on the back. I wrote Ring of Fire at the very end. I had a quadcopter drone that attempted to assassinate the President of the United States. And I said in the acknowledgments, we haven't seen this kind of threat for yet, but I promise you it's coming. Now, of course, everybody's talking about these quadcopter drones. So staying on top of that kind of stuff is really hard to do.
I want to talk a little bit more about Pike Logan. And I'm curious, you've written 20 novels featuring this character. How has he evolved over time?
That's probably the hardest part about writing a series. When I create an antagonist out of whole cloth for each of the books, then that's your free will, and it's a lot of fun. You get to do it. But Pike Logan, because it's a universe of books, he has to grow. He has to change. He has to evolve. When any human being, for the human condition, you know, you go to college, you grow. You get married, you grow. You have children, you grow. You may grow bad, you may grow good, you may be good or bad, but you're going to evolve one way or the other. And the hardest part about writing a series is making sure that Pike does, in fact, evolve. He's not the same person he was in book one.
Is evolving that character part of the reason why you continue to be interested in that character, because you can see that growth and it's interesting to continue to build his backstory?
Yeah, there's a lot of unique aspects that you don't see coming when you're writing the book. And so when he starts evolving one way or the other, you know, I wish I could say that I had some grand chart that I've got on the side here and saying, okay, book 21, now it's time to check this part off of Pike's story. But it doesn't work that way. There's always unique surprises as I'm writing the book that inform it.
Yeah, in talking with various authors, I hear that often, that sometimes the character kind of takes on a life of their own, and you might start developing a storyline for them, and then you realize, no, he would not do that. So you had to kind of have to change trajectory to make it fit with the character that you've come to know.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with my stories that when you're running around doing like real world missions, you're going to execute the mission. Like we just rescued the pilot there. You've got a straight problem set and you're going to solve that problem militarily. When Pike's running around Argentina, the main problem set is there's 1,000 things he can do. He's going to do one thing, but I have got to convey to the reader, why did he not do 999 other things? And that has got to make the most sense. It's got to be Occam's razor. You know, why is he picking the lock when there's a key on the floor? That kind of thing. You've got to make sure that all those questions are answered, and this is why he's doing that. And sometimes when you want him to do something because it's really cool and this is exactly what he'd do, you look at what you've written, you're like, but that's the hard way. I mean, it'd be much easier if he did something else, but that's such a cool scene. Well, then you have to go back and recreate, okay, why is it he's doing this? Why was that path not available and he chose this path?
I assume that comes down to sort of moral questions or questions of honor, the right way to do things, that he has to struggle sometimes because what he gets involved with is messy. And sometimes there's a lot of gray area, not clear black and white.
Absolutely. When I originally wrote One Rough Man, he had had trauma in his life and his moral compass was broken. There's two schools of thought for more than two, but general two schools of thought for what is moral and what is not. Immanuel Kant had what he called categorical imperatives, which the act in and of itself is either moral or immoral. Just the act itself is moral or immoral. John Stuart Mill's had utilitarianism, which we call the greater good, which is it's not the act itself, it's what comes out of the act that makes it moral or immoral. And those two dichotomies you see in national security fairs all the time. I mean, during the global war on terrors, it was, you know, we will not torture. We will never, ever, 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 ever torture. That's a categorical imperative. Oh, well, unless there's a nuclear bomb in New York City, then maybe it's permissible because we're going to save 5 million people. Well, now you've stepped into the greater good. And he was a complete, his moral compass is broken, and he was, everything's a greater good, meaning I'm Pike Logan. If I say it's good, the outcome of this is what matters, and I'll do whatever it takes to get the outcome. And you see that like in military academies, it's a cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal. That's a categorical imperative. Nowhere in there does it say you can steal a loaf of bread because you're feeding a starving guy. That would be the greater good. The abortion discussion that everybody has, categorical imperative is you'll never, ever, ever, ever have an abortion. That's just it. The greater good side would be unless the mother's life's in danger. Now you're allowed to have an abortion. Well, now you've stepped into the greater good. Jennifer Cahill, his partner in crime, she is much more categorical imperative. She looks at certain things and says, that's just not the right. We're not doing that. You cannot, you know, break the law, even if by breaking the law, you get something better out of it. Pike is more like, I'll break whatever law there has to get what's better out of it. Since then, they've both evolved. She has become more gray, and he has gotten back into his original moral compass, where he realizes that there are some things that are categorical imperatives, and other times the greater good does take hold. And Jennifer's gone the other way. She's like, okay, sometimes I can see this. Sometimes it's worth jaywalking if you're going to save a child type thing. And she's grown more into utilitarianism.
Well, as we mentioned, this is the 20th book to feature Pike Logan. And I'm wondering, I'm sure in an ideal world, you love that people read all 20 of the books to get a full picture of Pike Logan. But will this book stand alone for people who are brand new to the series?
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that I tell people, you know, you'll get a full background of who Pike is, who the task force is, the threat vectors they are, even the ghost, you'll recognize, you'll see his backstory. The only thing I'll say is there may be, if you're reading a book out of order, you might get a spoiler from another book. It'll have nothing to do with the plot, but some character may mention something to another character from another book that older readers will go, I know what he's talking about. New readers will say, I don't have any idea. And then if they go to that book, they'll say, well, I think I might know what's going to happen here. But they're absolutely standalone in and of themselves. And that actually is one of the harder parts of writing a series, because on the one hand, you don't want to bore the old reader. You don't want to put a PowerPoint up front saying, new readers, read this briefing before starting. But on the other hand, you don't want the old readers to go, here we go again. I got to get this whole backstory on what the task force is and how they operate and where these call signs came from and who this person is. But on the other hand, I have to have a new reader that does understand all that. And so I've become quite adept at dripping that stuff through the book as you go along, so it doesn't, you know, hammer an old reader, but the new reader still gets what he needs to understand.
Well, Brad, there's a question I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters from this novel, who would it be and why?
From this novel? You know, it might actually be the ghost. Just to pick his brain as why he's doing what he's doing. That would probably be it. I know Pike and Jennifer so well, I wouldn't have to pick their brain.
So what's next for you?
We've just got back from Japan. I'm writing book 21 as we speak, which would involve a threat, AI threat, artificial intelligence threat that's stolen from here by North Korea and is working with the Yakuza in Japan, their mafia.
This current book is Shadow Strike, a Pike Logan novel by Brad Taylor. Brad, thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Enjoyed it.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.